Welcome to another episode of Off the Hook, which is all things sales, all things property. Today, I'm very excited to have with me in the studio someone that I consider a very, very good friend, a very close friend. We've been friends for a long time, but also somebody that I respect very much in the property industry and who's doing something very exciting with tech and with buyer's agencies, which is what we're going to learn about today. So I'm very excited to introduce my guest today. It's Mark Mendel, CEO and Managing Director and all things Move. Mark, great to have you in the studio.
How are you, Mark?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
Nice
I'm feeling
to see
good.
You.
For those who haven't seen our or listened to our podcast, I'm Mark Bernberg, Managing Director of Ray White Projects. And today's episode on Off the Hook is all things buyer's agencies. So why don't we start, maybe introduce people to Move and what you guys do and how you're different?
Yeah, sure, 100%. So Move, we're a tech-enabled buyer's agency. Effectively, you know, people are out there struggling to find a property, whether it's to live in or as an investment. And it's our job to understand their needs and then make it super easy for them. So make it more efficient, make it cost effective, and effectively give them a successful purchase. And when people try and do it themselves, or when people try and do it with a newbie to the space, anyone can buy a property, right?
Mm.
But buying the right property at the right price, very hard to do.
Well, they say you make your money when you buy, not when you sell.
That's right. Ask all your developers.
That's for sure. All right. So what I loved about that is tech-enabled buyer's agency. I'm going to put that to one side because that's what I really want to learn about today.
Yep.
But let's just go back a second. I mean, I'm seeing a huge rise in the number of buyer's agents, buyer's agencies. You know, it seems
scary.
Like every man and his dog now it wants to be a buyer's agent. Traditionally, I think buyer's agencies were seen as being sort of this premium, exclusive, only for the very wealthy. Do you feel that buyer's agencies are becoming more mainstream?
So I think, I mean, buyer's agents have been around for a long time, right? Probably 20, 25 years. Mm. Probably in the last 5-6 years, they've become more mainstream, more so in the investment space than the home buyer space. Yes, in like the eastern suburbs of Sydney and the lower north shore, you're getting these prestige buyer's agents, but the majority of buyer's agents and what you're seeing in the market are investor focused, and they are data driven, or they claim to be data driven. It's always questionable in terms of where their data is coming from, but they're out there and they're juniors. Like, they have a passion for property, but they don't have 25 years of experience that can sort of, you know, put on a plate exactly, have an understanding of, you know, what the property market cycles go through. So, you know, that's an issue I think I see in the market at the moment. And, you know, while there are really good buyer's agents out there, there's also really poor ones. Just like there's good real estate agents and there's bad real estate agents.
Definitely.
And effectively, up until probably the last couple of years, you've never seen a bad buyer's agent because there haven't been that many of them. But the explosion of growth in the buyer's agent market, with people doing these online courses and then overnight becoming a buyer's agent and then going and spending your $500,000 or $1 million on an investment property, is a scary proposition when they may have lucked out with their own investment game personally. But to put somebody else's money at risk, it's questionable.
Because there's a big difference, right, between we see a lot between an investor and an owner-occupier. So an owner-occupier is coming in and there's just so much emotion. Whether they feel that this is the right place for them, can they envisage themselves waking up and sunlight pouring into their bedroom, whatever it might be. But investors, traditionally, it's all run by the numbers. And, you know, I won't say there's no emotion, because I think there's always emotion in any sale, but there's very little emotion. So how are you guys at Move doing things differently to really tap into that data that is the foundation for investment decisions?
Yeah. So, I mean, data is everything, but data is also not everything. So, you know, if I go back 12 months or 18 months, 18 months ago, let's say, we were looking at Perth as a marketplace to invest, 18 months to 2 years ago. And we knew Perth was was hot, and we sort of we ran the data that we look at, and that's government data, sales data, stock on market, days on market, buyer levels of interest, demand supply, like you name it, the data has been pulled into our system from a variety of different sources. And the data led us to a list of 7 core suburbs that we felt had long-term growth potential. Not short-term growth potential, but long-term growth potential.
And what would you define long-term as?
10 years.
Okay.
10 years of consistent capital growth.
Yeah.
So we weren't looking for the quick win. The quick win we knew would come because the market as a whole was working in their favor. But we were looking for that long-term capital growth where we're not looking for clients that want to buy and sell in 3 years' time.
Yeah.
That is a very risky game. Property is a long-term game. And if you ask anyone that's bought a good investment property and sold it, if they regretted selling it, the answer is typically always yes.
Yeah.
Because it's always worth more today than it was in the past.
Well, what's that adage? They say it's not timing the market, it's time in the market. Time that is everything. Market.
Correct. Yeah. Mm. But timing the market today with the data we have on hand is also possible. So now we have to take into account from an investor perspective, what is their strategy? Is it investment property one or investment property number 3 or 4? And then we look at the cash flow requirements and all the rest of it. But if I come back to that list in Perth where we had 7 key suburbs, when we got on the plane and we walked the streets, 2 of those suburbs didn't meet the cut because you get a sense for it. When you're on the ground and you're talking to real estate agents and you're talking to small business and you're looking at not at what the data is showing you but actually what the people are talking about, you sort of – it's that extra layer.
For sure.
So it's like data only takes you so far, and I think a lot of these junior buyers agents that come into the market, they rely 100% on the data. They've never been on the ground. They've never inspected where they're actually buying on behalf of their clients. And it can go wrong.
So let's talk about these buyers. Don't need to tell you the last 2 years have been pretty tough in the market. Obviously, a week or so ago, we had an interest rate cut. I think everybody is pretty settled on the fact that we're entering a new era now, maybe of downward trending rates. When the next cuts will happen, I don't have a crystal ball. I wish I did. I would have bought Bitcoin in 2012.
As we all would have, yep.
Yep. But, or invested in Perth 2 years ago.
Yes.
Which would have been a smart decision. But how do you see buyers are changing with changing market conditions? It's been tough. There's been supply shortages. There's been massive interest rate rises. It's really hammered people's borrowing capacity. I think a lot of people get very frustrated searching for real estate. Like, how do you see some of the trends changing from a buyer's perspective?
I look at it a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
Every year, there's sort of 550,000 to 650,000 transactions that occur in Australia. Whether it's a good year or a bad year, that's the volume of transactions. And people are forced to move.
Mm.
You know, there's divorces. People separate, they sell their home, they find smaller properties. There's births, so people are looking to upgrade their homes. There's downsizes. And there's always that 30, 35% of investors.
Mm.
And what they're looking for, I suppose, in today's market is more transparency and more certainty around what they're doing, because the market is a lot more complex today than it was, say, 10 years ago.
Give me an example of that.
There's an overwhelming amount of noise
and
data, and people actually don't know who to listen to or what to listen to. So, you know, if I go back 20 years, you know, you'd have a conversation with a lead, with a client, and they would talk to you. You'd talk to them and you'd say, look, buying a one-bedroom apartment in Surry Hills for $450,000 is a good investment, right?
Can you imagine?
But they don't buy it because their hairdresser has told them not to buy it.
Mm.
Literally, that was an example of a client that decided not to buy. So you take that today and you magnify that with social media and the amount of additional data that is out there.
So true.
How does anyone take all that data and distill it into something that they actually understand and is meaningful and then make a decision off the back of it? And I suppose that is what we are very good at doing, is understanding the client's needs, using the data to then point them in the right direction and help them. Because if you go back 6 months, if you go back 10 years ago and you look at like REA and all their surveys, an average home buyer, for example, used to take 4, 5, 6 months to buy. Today, the average home buyer takes 11 months to buy. Why is it taking 11 months to buy? That's the question, right? Like, the market is more complex. They're a little bit more uncertain about exactly what they should be doing. Because there is all that additional data and information out there. So they just, they sort of stumble,
yeah,
and lose themselves. And it's now a 6 month education process instead of a 3 month education process. And speed is everything. If you're buying into a market that's growing at 10% a year and you've got $1 million and it takes you that full 11 months to buy, you're spending an extra $100,000 that you didn't need to if you could have done it in 38 days.
Mm. I think that's the point that most people miss. We're on the other side of the fence. Obviously, we're the selling agents.
Mm.
And, you know, I can't tell you how many clients I spoke to 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and saying to them just before COVID, like, this is the best time to buy. Even in those days, they were getting, you know, 2-bedroom in Liverpool for 500.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
For those of you who don't know, you can buy in Liverpool. You know, nowadays it's 750,
yeah,
800. And that's just Liverpool. So, you know, you need to forget the eastern suburbs and the high growth areas in the inner west. But people don't understand the opportunity cost of sitting on the sidelines and not trusting an expert. Because we have the same thing. You know, we'll bring a client to a property and they'll look at it and they'll love it. And then on the Uber drive home, the Uber driver will tell them, no, there's an oversupply of apartments in the area, where the data clearly shows, not even maybe, sort of, if it's just black and white, there's not. Yep. Vacancy rates below 1%, rental growth above 10%.
Yep.
But the Uber driver's told them, look, you should wait. You know, there's more cuts coming. Because the Uber driver's reading the Sydney Morning Herald that, yep, of course, has been telling us for 30 years that property prices are going to halve.
Yeah. You can't, I mean, I don't look at the media. I don't look at the news. I just look at the data and the facts. And there's always going to be a naysayer out there that says the market's going to drop 20, 30%.
Yeah.
And, you know, traditionally it's really never happened. Like, there are periods where there is slow growth or no growth. There are periods where the market sort of, after a large rise, comes back. So it might rise 30% over a few years and then come back 5 or 6%. But if you look at history and you look at the way the Australian economy is set up and the way the politicians sort of push property to the pedestal of, you know, the Australian dream, so, yeah, to speak, the desire is always there for property prices to be stable or to grow.
And what do you think buyers are prioritizing most these days? I mean, we always hear, obviously, you know, location, 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 but let's just assume that it's one of these 5 growth suburbs in Perth, because you took 2 out. Mm. You know, what, so assuming we found a suburb, so location is ticked, you know, what is it that you're finding that buyers are looking for these days?
Home buyers or investors?
Well, I mean, you deal more with investors, so let's look at investors, you know.
Okay. I mean, we 50-50.
Okay. Well, then, you know what, for the purposes of this show, let's actually talk about the owner occupiers.
Yeah.
What in your experience are you starting to see that they're placing a higher importance on, let's say?
So public transport, number one.
Okay.
By far, especially in Sydney.
Mm.
More so in Sydney than, say, Brisbane or Melbourne or Perth. Public transport, number one. Just everyone hates the traffic. They need to get to work. Second is if they've got kids or going to have kids, school.
Yeah.
So it's got to be in a good school zone.
Yeah.
And then space at home. So I think in this post-COVID world where you know, one or two of you are working from home, there is that desire for extra space. So whether that is whether that's in an apartment and going for that extra bedroom, or if that's a house and you're looking for, you know, a small bit of, you know, grass to play on, they just want space.
All right. So as I understand it, proximity to transport, school catchment zones, and, you know, I would say space / lifestyle. We've also found from our side that, you know, amenities, that 20-minute neighborhood, call it, where you can 100%. Walk to get a coffee or, you know, take your kids to the park or something like that. All right, so owner-occupiers, that's pretty clear for the investors.
It's data-driven. So, you know, for us, it's about strong socio-demographics, buying a property that has owner-occupier appeal. So when they look to sell that property in 10 years' time, it's a home buyer that's buying it rather than an investor. And they don't really care whether it's metro, regional, as long as there's going to be that sort of consistent capital growth.
And do they also want proximity to transport to be as close as possible, do you find?
Less so. It's more about it's the macroeconomics at play in a region, the microeconomics at a suburb level, and then we take it one step further to look at, you know, particular pockets within suburbs and picking out the best streets or the best spots, and obviously avoiding the flood zones and the bushfire zones and everything else that comes with
living
half
in Australia.
Half your investments in Australia, correct?
Plus also, what is it, the top 20 most vicious animals and predators in the world?
Yeah, that we can't
stop that, right? Yeah. Okay, so I'm hearing data, and how important is access to this data in the decision-making process, which I think you've kind of answered of saying it's crucial. But then how today, with, as we've discussed, so much data, so much noise. I mean, everybody's an expert on TikTok, right? And everybody can tell you how to create wealth and you're going to buy 7 properties in 5 years. So with all this data, with all this noise, how are buyers supposed to deal with this? Do you find they are overwhelmed? And if they're not, how are they meant to deal with this data?
So I think the buyers that we work with, they're obviously talking to a few different buyers agents before they come on board with us. And the reason they come on board with us is because we're so transparent with our data. We effectively share it with them through the journey of them inquiring to becoming a client. And they love that transparency. So they can see what we can see. We explain to them how we make decisions. We simplify the process. And by layering these data points and the relevant data points, because sometimes buyer's agents go over the top and it's not necessary. They take into account 50 different data points. You don't need 50 different data points to be able to pick a good property in a good suburb. Just keeping it simple, because it's a complex world out there. So if they trust us, they can trust our data because it's coming from some of the largest data players in the country, which we pay a lot of money for. It's a very easy process.
They say in both football and in business that the hardest thing is quite often the simplest thing. You talk about making the data simple. How has the Move technology, how does Move help with its tech stack make it simpler? Because you're 100% right. I mean, we both look at data on a daily basis, and there's so much of it, and you can be so overwhelmed so fast. So how have you guys used tech to make that simpler?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the biggest ones is socio-demographics for us.
Okay, so for anybody that's listening to this that's going, socio who? Explain it to some of our listeners like I'm a 6-year-old.
Yeah. So when we look at socio-demographics, we boil it down to 4 key components. You've got unemployment rates, education levels, income levels, and home ownership.
Right.
And we sort of take all of those and we put them on a distribution scale and we weight it from 1 to 10. If you're in an area where there is super high unemployment, 10, 11, 12% unemployment, low income levels on an average compared to the state. Your home ownership levels are low, so say 30% instead of like 60%. And your education levels, well, you've only got a small proportion of people that have completed year 12 or a university degree. That would be rated a one.
Not okay? A place where you should or be buying.
Two. Not necessarily a place where you should be buying.
Got it.
So one would be like social housing.
Got it.
So, you know, our data picks up where all the social housing is across Australia, and obviously that is an area that we will avoid.
Right.
And then on the other side of the scale is your likes of the prestige eastern suburbs of Sydney, where pretty much the whole area is a 9 or a 10. Now, our clients aren't spending $10 million buying an investment property, but they are spending between typically $500,000 to $1.5 million. And whether that means we're delving into Sydney and we're going to the western suburbs or the Hills District, or we're going up to Queensland, or we're going to Perth or to Adelaide, or wherever we might be going, the first thing we start with is that sociodemographics.
And what sort of score? You've obviously said one is, let's call it, you know, low economic areas and social housing, to 10 being, you know, Potts Point or Point Piper in the eastern suburbs. Where are you guys looking?
So we are typically looking anywhere from a 4 to a 7 or an 8, depending on the location and depending on the client's strategy.
Right.
So typically, you know, if we look at an area that's a, say, a 3, it might be a 3 for a reason, but there might be macroeconomic factors at play that will see that go from a 3 to a 4 to a 5 over the next 10 to 15 years.
Government infrastructure, new schools.
New schools, shopping centres.
Sure.
Gentrification effectively 100%. Taking place. But it's got to be driven by not only those macroeconomic factors, but also by homeowners. If we look at a market, so a market in Perth, and as an example, is Armidale, which is effectively ranked, I think, a 2 on our map. And we break those suburbs down to pockets. So sometimes there are suburbs that have, like Seven Hills in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
Is an area that has pockets that are a 1 and a 2, and then there's pockets that are like 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So we're obviously avoiding those red pockets. Mm. But yeah, we effectively are looking at we're looking at an area that is driven by own occupier demand, not by investor demand. So Armidale had massive capital growth over the last 4 years, like massive, like 40, 50, 60%. Like,
wow.
Stupid, right? But 100% driven by big box buyers agencies.
Mm.
That, you know, when you talk about Facebook marketing, those are the guys that you're seeing pushing those sort of investment opportunities. And the issue we have with that is while they've done exceptionally well and they've got that capital growth in 3-4 years, if you're looking to hold an investment property for the long term, when the investors stop buying and they actually start selling because they want to get out and take their equity that they've made, who is the buyer?
Mm.
Is it another investor who's pulled out of the market, or is it a home buyer who just can't afford it because they're not employed or their income levels aren't up to scratch? So that's why we try and avoid those areas unless there are macroeconomic factors.
And is it your tech and your tech stack that is enabling you to identify these pockets, call them markets within markets almost?
100%. So it's all layered over a map.
Right.
So we show our clients like exactly where we're buying, what the score is of the area, whether it's a home buyer or an investor, because a lot of home buyers are out there as well. And they are buying in suburbs like Seven Hills, and they don't know that this particular pocket and this particular pocket are no-go zones.
Wow. So, I mean, that's invaluable.
Correct. Correct.
Especially, I mean, if you're with a capital purchase of this size, that you need time and you need that compounded growth effect to kick in.
Correct.
So what's the next step for Move? Obviously, you guys are up and running, very successful launch, got an unbelievable tech stack. How do you see technology and we've got to use the buzz AI word in here somewhere, but how do you use the we had a good laugh before this because we were like, you know, we could have used AI to ask the questions, answer the questions, clone our voices, clone our video, and we could have been having lunch now while this was going on.
Correct.
But it's all scary. Right, it's scary, scary, but sad, but true. But okay, pushing that to one side, how do you see the next year or two? And we'll take it from your business's perspective, from a buyer's agency perspective. How is tech and AI going to potentially enable, disable, supercharge the real estate industry?
Yeah. So I think, I mean, if I take a step back and I look at it from a real estate agent's perspective, the real estate agents that are going to be successful over the next 5 years are going to be the ones that embrace technology as much as possible. Mm. You know, that's a given. Mm. 10 years ago, I did a talk that said real estate agents won't exist 10, 15 years from when I did that talk.
I'm sure there's a lot of people that would wish that to be true.
And, well, what I realized was that this is a human game. Mm. Like, it is very personal. It is very emotional. It doesn't matter whether it's investment or not. There are emotions at play. And you cannot take the human element out of a real estate transaction. But what you'll find is that the top real estate agents will stick around and their volumes will double. Mm. And that bottom 20, 30% of real estate agents that don't embrace technology will sort of disappear. And I think, you know, while we're seeing this rapid growth of buyers agents in the market at the moment, a lot of those will disappear. Like, they come in, they make a quick dollar and they'll disappear because they're not embracing technology the same way that someone like us is. And there's plenty of other buyers agents in the space that are using technology. I'm not tech obsessed, I'm customer obsessed. So is there a way that we can use technology to give the client a better buying experience?
Yes.
Can we help them buy faster? Can we make it easier for the real estate agent on the other side to work with us? Like, these are the things that we look at. And a lot of it comes down to communication and simplifying the data so that people can make educated, quick decisions rather than hashing it out over weeks and potentially missing out on the perfect property.
And I think that's the key, right? So, you know, as most people listening to this will know, you know, I didn't come from the real estate game. I came from the tech space. So for me, the interplay between real estate and technology is fascinating because you've got these dinosaurs, the sort of the old breed of real estate agents who, you know, they just believe that technology will never replace the humans. But I'm totally on board with you because I think where tech can become really powerful is we are in the information age. I mean, everything is at your fingertips. You know, I was watching the first season of Tulsa King and Sylvester Stallone gets released from prison after 25 years. He doesn't know about mobile phones and he's like, you know, who could we ask where the best restaurant in town is? And they look at him like, what about Google?
Yeah.
So we're in an information age now where, and I think what's really scary about this information age, particularly now in the age of AI, is what is real and what is not. You know, we just joked we could do this whole podcast and it wouldn't be real and most people wouldn't know.
Yep. So I'll tell you what's scary.
Yeah.
Next week, we have a call with a company. So I spoke to you before the podcast about we're looking to hire a salesperson to help us with, you know, the volume of inbound leads that we're getting, and we sort of need to grow that part of the business. And so next week we're talking to a company that uses AI bots to call leads to qualify them to do a discovery call effectively and understand their needs before passing them on to a human that can then actually help them.
So we actually use that in our business already.
Right.
Voice AI dialers.
Yeah.
It's interesting that the companies that you deal with, they'll allow you to clone your voice to 60%, legally not allowed to actually clone your voice.
Right.
Because that's quite frightening. Mm. But I actually think that's incredibly useful. I mean, we were chatting, you know, just before about your sales gig, and anybody listening, they're growing quickly, so reach out to Mark. But having an AI agent be able to handle the you know how it is in sales, right? You get for every 100 leads, there's only about 15 prospects in there and maybe three or four clients. So a lot of our time is taken up dealing with time wasters, looky-loos, negative Nellies, call them whatever you want, right? They actually get enjoyment out of signing up on Facebook and then telling you how bad the property market is. That's what they do. That's their vibe. And we love listening. So it's like lifeline for real estate agents. But
I don't know if I get those ones.
But you agree, you go through a lot of calls to find, you know, it's like sifting gold, right? You go through a lot of sand to find the nuggets. So I think there is an instance where I think AI is very powerful, because it's doing that sort of, let's call it repetitive pre-work, pre-qualifying, but it's never going to be able to replace, my opinion, a full agent or a buyer's agent, because the purchase price is too big.
I agree, except for off the plan space. I believe that for a long time.
I would argue more in the off the plan space. So I'm in the off the plan space, as you know.
Yeah.
And I won't put you on the spot by saying should buyer's agents be buying off the plan, but we won't go there. But when you think about off the plan, right, all you're selling is an illusion. It's a dream. It's correct. A vision. It's a future. I would hesitate to say that an AI bot is going to struggle to tap into that emotion of building that vision, that dream, that illusion for someone. Because what are they walking out with? They're walking out with a piece of paper and a vision in their mind of what it is.
Correct. But you've got VR goggles.
Yeah.
That you can immerse somebody into the building.
Yeah.
And that can now happen at home.
Yeah.
You can literally play a movie to them. It's not just your story now. You've got like the dramatic music in the background, and you've got, at some point in time, you're going to have the ability to smell the sea that's close to you or whatever the case is, right? So The only place where I think, because you can't touch it and feel it, because it's not built, the only place where I see the opportunity to replace an agent is off the plan. And in a previous life, 10, 15 years ago, we were doing that. We were transacting, we were allowing people to buy a property online without ever talking to an agent. And, you know, this is for people that were very definitive about what they wanted, and you know, they had the floor plans, they had the brochures, they had all the information they needed, and they could effectively go online and reserve a property. Now, are they actually transacting and buying the final property? No. Then someone would obviously call them and talk them through it, and they might change apartments or whatever the case is. But that's a pretty good qualified client that's paid a $2,000 reservation fee to buy apartment 1506.
Hell yeah.
The other opportunity is obviously in the land side of things. You do not need an agent to sell a block of land.
Fair enough.
If you go out to these housing estates,
yeah,
yes, you need to sell the estate. But they can drive to the land. They can see that it's flat. They can see the size of it. You do not need a real estate agent to sell them anything about the land. It is about the community.
Yeah. It's funny, I won't name mentions, but I saw one of the big land providers the other day. They did a walk your lot day. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting you say that, because, you know, the whole experience there was to go and walk on a piece of ground.
Yeah.
And I remember chuckling at the time thinking, you know, what do you really get from that? You go walk on the land. We sell off the plan apartments quite often. We sell off the plan apartments that are nearly complete. We find 80 to 90% of people that walk through an empty apartment cannot even picture whether their couch is going to fit in there.
Correct.
So how, when you walk on an empty piece of land, are you getting any sort of visual representation in your mind of how your house is going to look and sit on that land? So yep. I think you may be onto something. I like it. It's controversial. We're saying, hey, well, Mark's saying, the other Mark, that AI could replace off-the-plan sales.
To a degree.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Anything else you see in terms of the next 2 years and buyers and technology and...
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot, right? Like, you've got CoStar in the US that's looking to try and acquire Domain. Mm. I don't know where that's going at the moment. But, you know, they've certainly ruffled some feathers in the UK and the US. it'll be interesting to see where that happens here, what happens here. But we're living in a world where buyers are time poor and want to get things done quickly. And our biggest competitor is the fact that everyone has bought a property, or everyone knows someone that's bought a property, and they think they can do it themselves. But 10, 11 months down the line, we have some people that call us up 2 years later. And I think to myself, like, the amount of money it's cost you by not either engaging a professional or just buying something and being sure and certain about it 2 years ago, like, the cost is overwhelming. So there's a couple of factors at play. One is this education piece. So the fact that it's taking now 11 months for someone to, on average, to buy a property concerns me a lot. So we're looking at ways to sort of understand, or to sort of demonstrate to the consumer and educate them in 30 seconds instead of 6 months, which is what it normally takes them to educate themselves about a market. So we're looking at data and tech around that. And then we're looking at the interaction of the client on our platform. Like, what can we give them to make their life as easy as possible? So, like, the big portals do not give price guides. They don't give comparable sales against properties. So this is all information that is piled onto our platform, so that when the client looks at a particular property, they're not looking at the agent's price guide anymore. They're now looking at a desktop valuation, and they're looking at comparable sales. So they have a very clear idea of where the price is going to land.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then we take it a step further and we go, as a scaling business, you know, we might have 5 or 6 buyer's agents today, but in 2 years' time, we might have 50 or 60. How can we make their lives more efficient? So a lot of the platform we've built today is to help us scale that and make their lives more efficient. So the reason a lot of the buyer's agents have joined us is because of our platform.
100%.
So they've been doing it themselves. It's, you know, very admin heavy, very, very slow. And we take what they would do in a day, we would sort of literally do that in a minute, in terms of analyzing properties and,
for sure,
and going through the opportunities. So for us, the buyer's agents coming on board, love the tech stack. We want the clients to love the tech stack, because it's always adding value to whatever their job is, whether it's the client, whether it's the buyer's agent, whether it's our support team. As long as it adds value, we'll be developing. Otherwise, it's just a waste of time. It's just a gimmick.
For sure. All right. Last question. I do it to everybody that's on the podcast, so you're going to be no different. But you spoke earlier about, you know, 5 suburbs in Perth. You know, anybody listening now, the next 12, 18 months, any suggestions on areas or localities you think would be a good opportunity?
Yeah, interesting. Really depends on the buyer,
mm-hmm,
and what they're looking for. I assume you're talking about an investor, right? But let's keep that same
price point,
right,
you mentioned, which was what I think it was about 500 to 1.5.
500 to 1.5, right?
Keep so it there.
Obviously, we're talking about investors.
Sure.
And, you know, if we look at the market today, and I'll sort of squeeze that price range to sort of 750 to 1.2.
Okay.
You've got pockets of Brisbane.
Mm-hmm.
You've got regional pockets of New South Wales. And for those that are happy to wait a little bit longer, there are certainly signs now that Melbourne is at the bottom, and the activity is sort of suggesting that there will be a rise at some point in the future. When that happens, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
And I think it's very much driven by November 26 government election, state election. And if we see a change in government, then we should see maybe a few changes in policies, especially around investors that are not happy with the current state government. And that'll definitely drive growth. But you know, if we're looking over, if we're looking for capital growth over the next 18 months, Brisbane, regional New South Wales, Newcastle, other pockets in New South Wales. If you're looking for longer term capital growth and you're happy to sort of play that waiting game, Melbourne will grow. It's just a matter of when.
You heard it here first. Mark Mendel, CEO of Move. Thank you, mate. Good friend of mine, good colleague, somebody I respect. Good luck with this year. One of the fastest growing buyers agencies. Anybody listening, reach out to Mark. We'll put his details not personal details, but we'll put the company details in the caption below. And thanks for joining us today.
Awesome. Absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Cool. We'll see you soon on Off the Hook.
Great stuff, guys.
That was beautiful, man.